everybody, and welcome to our podcast. I'm working today with, I'm really pleased to have you back with me, Samreen. So Samreen Shah, hi, how are you?
Hi, Esther. I'm so excited to be back. It feels like it's been a while. Yes. I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I've got a little bit of a croaky voice, so hopefully everybody will forgive me if I go into a coughing fit, but it's that time of year, isn't it? Particularly back to school time of year when everybody gets coughs and colds.
Absolutely. It's just great to be here. So, you know, we'll keep going.
Thank you. So thank you to everybody for your comments and really engagement with our last episode, where Karen Nash, the pastoral officer of the National Extension College, joined us. And we talked about transitions, just because it was that time of year where people were potentially transitioning to a new year at school or a new school, or as an adult, perhaps transitioning back into education. So that was, it was good to unpick some of the issues and challenges that surround that. So I mean, we thought we had a little bit of a discussion about the topic for today. And interestingly, we both felt probably a little bit nervous, perhaps, talking about some of the areas that we're going to talk about today. Do you want to sort of introduce what we're trying to have a go at discussing today?
Yeah, I you're right. And it's really good to begin with kind of an honest disclosure that I think we're both feeling a bit nervous about it. But I think that reflects why this is such an important conversation. And we were discussing looking at protective characteristics for learners in schools, and how we actually do what the title of that says and protect those characteristics, and what responsibility schools have and how we support parents, and most importantly is how we keep the young person central to this. And I think it is so important yet complicated, and it changes with society's pressures and times that are going on. And in this kind of, in our conversations of this, we started off by saying, well, what are these protective characteristics and why are they important? And I know you were going to go through those.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Samreen. So Education Equality Act 2010 puts forward 9 of the protective characteristics. And this is really sort of building on that whole aspect of inclusion. So the age, disability, gender reassignment, marriage and civil partnership, pregnancy and maternity, race, religion or belief, sex and sexual orientation. And quite quickly, I think we can probably see the ones that are really more sort of prominent or more sort of relevant to being in an education setting. But that's not all, because obviously if you're in an education setting, further education or higher education, all of these may have a relevance as well. So is that list the right list? Do we feel that it was 2010, we're now 2023. I think that it does capture every aspect that does need some protection. Obviously it's based on a lot of the World Health Organization and UNESCO work. Is there anything there that you feel, or anything that's missing, would you say, Samreen, or is it all encapsulated within those 9?
I think it does, and I think what stands out to me as I look at the list, and I think for both of us who have been in education for over 20 years, you see how over that time different parts of those have become focused on or haven't, or haven't been enough, and where we are now in 2023 and what we're thinking about. I think, you know, they're all without a doubt equally important, but almost as if as we go through the list, you think to yourself, how well are we educated on supporting with this now? And that's what we were talking about when it comes to the list, is where are we with these, and are we doing enough?
Yeah, I agree. So there's been a lot in the news and the media regarding sex education. And that's quite a challenge at the moment for schools to navigate, I think, and with very little guidance. There is guidance from Ofsted around the incorporating of the protective characteristics and what that means in a school environment. And obviously it is part of the Ofsted framework and part of the Ofsted inspection. So schools have to in some way engage with this. They have to have some strategy at school level and some understanding, particularly across the senior leadership team, of how this is then going to be translated into working with the curriculum, working with teachers and the educators in the school, and then working with the children. I think when we were talking about this earlier, Samreen, I think we were both concerned perhaps that you know, having some of this Ofsted framework can sometimes start to become a ticking exercise. Okay, yeah. We've covered this because you're trying to feed an inspector and a framework and a regulatory sort of idea, rather than what is the value of having these protective characteristics for a child, a student within a school.
I agree. I think the problem being, I mean, something like this is so important and it should be there within the culture of the school. Something which, you know, is like you walk into school and you say you can feel that this is a school where the young people are protected and taken care of, and it's there within the language of the school, within the culture of the school. And the worry, although you can understand why Ofsted would inspect on it, is that it then does become a tick box exercise. And I think the thing to take away, which is really important to keep in mind, it's not that you meet these requirements, you know, when we're educating young people about this, you don't have to do that just say all by year 8 or year 9. This can go throughout their educational time in a school, which is reflective of how learning happens anyway. And it's developed as you go on, our understanding's developed as our own experiences are developed. And I think that's school culture, isn't it? It's when the school takes something on completely. And we were talking about how, you know, when it doesn't work, what this is actually labelled as now is identity-based bullying. And we do, you know, in a world in which we now do struggle with identity, and it is much more a question, particularly lockdown had that impact, didn't it? When the identity of school was taken away for a lot of young people, they were at school and then they weren't at school, and school being that stability for a lot of them did bring up a lot of these issues and a lot of these protective characteristics that may have been protected at school. Suddenly all of that became a lot more kind of, I think, more at risk.
A couple of organisations that have been really trying to work to support schools and teachers to embed that culture within the schools. But the National Bullying Helpline, which is an organisation I think most people will have an understanding of, and the Anti-Bullying Alliance. The National Bullying Helpline did note that bullying is a particular risk for pupils with special education needs, then disabled pupils, lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender, and then ethnic minority pupils or pupils from a religious background. So, and just that list itself, you can see the alignment with the protected characteristics straight away, can't you? So bullying, you know, those who are at risk of more bullying are those who fall under that protected characteristic. So the school has a real duty to try and understand how to incorporate that within the culture of the school.
Yeah, I agree. I think they do have a duty, and I think a lot of schools, I mean, people have different experiences, but I think schools do try with this. I think it's because a lot of these issues are changing so quickly, as we're understanding more about transgender, how we support, whereas maybe that we know that would have been treated very differently before. It is about whether within that are we doing the right thing. You know, how are we getting the message across? How are we supporting? And it's where the education happens, because it has to be with the school and also supporting families too.
I agree. There's also a few ways perhaps schools, I'm sure there's a fantastic practice happening, you know, we're saying schools.
Yeah.
There's a catch-all, but I'm sure there's individuals working really hard in this space. And there'll be schools who are really working hard to ensure that every child within their school feels safe. The phrase child-on-child abuse, it's something that sort of stops you in your tracks, really, when that phrase is used. And this is something that there's guidance for schools around this, around, you know, how systems in place for reporting, how they're recorded and investigated and resolved, sort of clear processes and how victims, perpetrators and other children affected, and a statement around zero tolerance around that type of child-on-child abuse, that it's not having a laugh, it's not banter, it's, you know, something that the school will take very seriously. And I can see that sort of phrasing, because it's from an organisation around supporting education. That's very much around what the school can evidence they are doing, I think, isn't it? That's, we're carrying out this, this is the process. But I think when we were talking earlier, it's around this, the school culture and ethos, isn't it? Where a lot of this work really needs to happen.
Mm.
So there's the Anti-Bullying Alliance is an organisation. I haven't worked with them a lot. I know a lot of our students come to us because and leave, you know, state education potentially because of bullying. And there is Anti-Bullying Week, which is the 13th of November to the 17th of November.
Yeah.
And, you know, good reason for us to highlight this. The Anti-Bullying Alliance has put forward 5 statements. We thought it might be quite useful to just discuss each of these perhaps a little bit. So the first statement is creating a school culture and ethos that reflects the importance of feeling safe and being part of an inclusive and supportive community. It's easy to say that. Any thoughts, Samreen, on that creation of a school culture? It's always quite a challenge,
yeah,
isn't it?
It is a challenge, and I think there are different ways in which school would do that, but I think when you're creating an inclusive school culture, you're putting student voice at the heart of that culture.
Okay,
and
yeah,
you're putting, and I think it's really good that the Anti-Bullying Alliance have named it Make a Noise, because the noise does have to come from the students themselves. And actually, it's thinking about, well, how are you recording student voice? Because when a child feels bullied, they often feel silenced or not heard. And because they're often ashamed of that characteristic, which actually should be protected. And so it's thinking about in that school culture, where is student voice? Where, and actually, once again, it's not a kind of student voice where the teachers, and they might do it completely, you know, with the best intention, but it's dominating the space. It's how do we bring that voice in? And how is that voice representative? And in order to do that, in order to know how to do that, you have to know your context, you have to know your school, you have to know your parents, you have to know your community. And I think that all contributes to school culture quite importantly. So,
I agree. I think particularly that the context of the school and the community, sometimes that potentially is slightly overlooked.
Understood. Sorry, I have so much to say about this, but not understood, because you could misunderstand as well your own context and own culture that you're in. So it's being understanding it, because I've seen places, I have visited schools where they might feel a bit defensive from the parents.
And then
it creates a them and us feel, and it creates a separation. Maybe it's a whole chat for another podcast, Esther.
I love that, when we have the conversation.
Yeah.
That's another podcast, so we need to make a note of that. Thank you. It sounds like there's lots there that we could explore. So the number 2 in the Anti-Bullying Alliance points is celebrating difference. I think a lot of schools try really hard at this. And, you know, there's lots of resources and support material for schools and teachers to engage with that. I don't know whether you have any thought. I think it links back to number 1. How do we want to celebrate? How do the students want to celebrate difference? How does the school community want to celebrate it? And one of the points the Anti-Bullying Alliance says is about communication to parents and carers around what's happening in the school to celebrate difference, so it can be continued in the home as well.
I agree, and if it reflects the home as well. And I think there's so much joy in celebrating differences, and especially if you take celebrations which are joyful, when you see schools which are celebrating Christmas and Eid and Diwali and, you know, all of the different celebrations, and how joyful kids love, they love a party, they love a celebration. So I think in one of those, you know, when schools do them well, they're really joyful. They're really wonderful.
And it does lead on to using the language of diversity. And again, we spoke about this earlier. I think that taxonomy within a school can and should be challenged quite often, because often without realizing it, we as educators reinforce norms that don't represent a child in front of us, you know, one of the children in front of us in that classroom. And therefore, that suddenly marks them out as different, and therefore, then a potential target. From a bullying perspective. So just sort of, you know, simple things around, you know, not all parents, pupils will be heterosexual, not all pupils come from two-parent family, a wide range of areas around just thinking about language, I suppose.
I think I absolutely agree with you, and I think the challenge with that is actually the language of diversity evolves as our understanding evolves, as society evolves. And in order for that to work, teachers, senior management, they have to be educated as well on language, and why language has changed. Like, you know, when we first started teaching, we never spoke about pronouns and the importance of those and why would we use it and why a young person might identify with being, you know, male or female or neither or so on. And actually, where does the education begin in schools for staff with that, in order so that it trickles down, not as a kind of like a fear, oh no, I've used the wrong pronoun, oh this is awful, but actually as a sort of natural understanding and sometimes even a sort of transparency, look, I'm trying really hard here. I might get this wrong sometimes, but I absolutely respect that this needs to happen this way. And I think it is possible, but that all begins with education at the top level in order for it to cascade well.
Yes, I agree. And I think that transparency and openness is really important. My sister works in a FE college, sixth form college, and you know she says it can be really hard, you know, because from you know I'm in my 50s, so is she, in a certain generation. But as long as you are saying I'm trying, I really value that this is important, and I will try my utmost to make it work and right for you, whoever the student is that they're talking to. So the next point they have is including involving all pupils, and I think we've talked about that around that you know development of the community and the voice of the pupil, and then empowering staff and pupils is the final point that they put forward. I'm sure these themes will come up a lot during Anti-Bullying Week. For some students, school may be their only safe space. And potentially, because as we said, some of the protected characteristics are also areas that students are more at risk of being bullied. So there's this space that the school needs to really work at to enable the staff and the pupils to feel safe together. I think that's something that perhaps, you know, it's a partnership of creating that safety, isn't it? And that inclusion. And I think there's an element there also around children understanding their rights. So what is a child's right around how they want to be talked about, how they want to be engaged with in a conversation from a teacher. So it's that student voice again, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree, and I think with the with that idea of understanding their rights and that's something that's so important, that is part of, you know, educating and informing, you know, young people about where their rights are and what they're entitled to. And I think schools are quite good generally at doing that.
Yes, I agree. So we've tried in our special ways, that mean, to have a look at this area. I think we could probably pick out four or five podcasts from this conversation. We initially had a discussion around transgender and as that as a something that we might want to talk about, but we've both felt this was a good starting point perhaps for that conversation and an area that we feel we need more education around as well, and what it's like a transgender person. We don't know that, neither of us are. So there's a little bit there we'd like to work on as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, moving forward, we need, there's definitely stuff that I think as we're understanding and thinking more about this is how we're, how the message that we're giving and how we're supporting young people. And I think the thing to come out of this conversation and to come out of this podcast is that as much as we might have, you know, experiences and we might understand how schools work, this is something that evolves and we continue to evolve. And education not only is a priority for our young people, but also for teachers and also for parents. And it's a sort of like a community effort. We're all working on this together.
Wonderful. That's a great way to end. And I'm coughing a lot now, so talking for 20 minutes, I'll probably need to pause, but really glad we got the opportunity to discuss this topic. Hopefully it's been of interest to our listeners, and any ideas on other topics that have come out of this or anything else you'd like us to discuss or look into, please don't hesitate to message us. Hopefully I'll be better.
Yes. Oh, that was wonderful. Thank you so much. A lot to think about.